Refuel with New Synergy Gasoline. Developed in the same ExxonMobil research lab as F1 Fuels, New Synergy Gasoline has been through and passed some of the most stringent tests ever developed, making it Exxon and Mobil's most tested fuel ever. Synergy Gasoline is engineered with 7 key ingredients, including dual detergents to help keep your engine cleaner. New Synergy Gasoline, only available at Exxon and Mobil. Energy lives here. Visit Exxon.com, that's EXXON.com, or Mobil.com, that's MOBIL.com, for more information. We're going to be talking some TV in this episode. If you want more TV content, go to theringer.com, where we are in the middle of our airing in plain sight package, welcoming back fall TV and covering some of the shows that don't get enough love on the internet. So again, that's theringer.com. Hello and welcome to the Ringer MLB show. My name is Ben Lindbergh and I'm a writer for theringer.com, joined as always by my fellow Ringer writer, Michael Bauman. Hello.
Hello. Since we're talking about TV, I've been boning up on my Chris Ryan impression.
Oh, yeah?
For this de facto installment of the Watch podcast.
Uh-huh.
But then I decided that the only thing more awkward than you and me talking to each other ordinarily would be you and me talking to each other pretending to be Chris and Andy. So I'm leaving that one alone.
I have a sound clip of Chris saying, "I love Narcos" 20 times in a row.
Narcos!
There it is. All right. So yeah, we are talking about TV later in this episode because there is a new baseball show. We talked about baseball movies on the first episode of the show you and I did together. So now there's a baseball show on Fox. It's called Pitch. It's premiering on Thursday, and it is a story of the first fictional female Major League Baseball player. And we've seen the first episode, and we think it's worth checking out if you're a baseball fan. So we are going to talk to the showrunner and executive producer of Pitch, Kevin Falls. Later in the episode, we are going to talk to two real-life professional female baseball players, Kelsey Whitmore and Stacey Piagno, who both played for the Sonoma Stompers, a otherwise men's independent league professional team that I co-wrote a book about. They just returned from the Women's Baseball World Cup, so we're going to talk to them. They both seen Pitch also, so we will see whether it passes muster with the women who have come closest to actually living this fictional life. So before we get to that, just a quick word about the Indians. There was a Cleveland kerfuffle this past weekend because a Cleveland beat writer, longtime Cleveland beat writer, Paul Hoynes, pronounced the Indians dead because the Indians, I'd say second best starter, perhaps, Carlos Carrasco, got hurt, got hit by a comebacker line drive over the weekend, has a broken bone, is done for the year. And this came on the heels of several other Indians injuries. They're in some trouble. So Danny Salazar also is likely done for the year. Carrasco's done for the year. Yan Gomes got hurt. So they've had an injury stack occur right here at the end of the season. And they have a 7-game lead in the Central as we speak. So they are very much assured of getting to October. But the question is, are they doomed when they get there? And Paul Hoynes wrote a story in which he pronounced the Indians dead on September 17th. And you have to give him credit, I think, for being ballsy enough to say something like that when he is a guy who goes into the Cleveland clubhouse on a daily basis. And a couple of players have already tweeted their dissatisfaction with Hoynes. Jason Kipnis said that he should not bother showing up the rest of the way, that he can write from home if he already knows the ending. Trevor Bauer tweeted something about how he noticed Hoynes wasn't at the game that day and that he was cowardly. It was actually that he had a scheduled off day that day, according to Hoynes, and he'll be back today. Anyway, the question is, are the Indians doomed? Can you pronounce a team doomed? You did an episode a couple weeks ago with Mallory about the panic meter and checking in on teams that were in trouble at the time. So are the Indians doomed? Should they be panicking?
No. And that's, you know, leaving alone whether, you know, writing that story that way was good for Paul Hoynes professionally. Although Bauer and Kipnis are not really big guys. So I think, you know, if it comes down to that, he's got a shot. But, right. You know, they've still got Corey Kluber. They've still got Trevor Bauer. They've still got a pretty deep lineup and a good bullpen. And they're all but in the playoffs already. So mm-hmm. I don't know how you can pronounce any team in Cleveland's position done.
Yeah, and he acknowledged that they are almost certainly going to make the playoffs, but that their postseason dreams ended, he argued, because of this, because they will now be relying on Josh Tomlin and Clevinger and, you know, guys who are significantly worse than Carrasco and Salazar. It's definitely a big hit, but it just kind of comes down to, your beliefs about October baseball and how in a 5-game series or a 7-game series, crazy stuff happens. The best team does not always win. I don't know, if you were going to say that the Indians had, what, a 10% chance, a 12% chance, a 15% chance of winning the World Series a week ago, whatever you would have said, how many percentage points are you downgrading them because they've lost two of their best, say, 4 starters?
For Salazar and Carrasco, if they were 10% a week ago, I'd put them at like 7% now.
Right. It's a significant blow.
It's a, you know, that's a third of their World Series win probability.
Right.
So, like, you know, that's not trivial, but neither is having Corey Kluber still in the rotation trivial either.
Yeah. That's the thing. I think it's just that when we get to this point in the year, people start pronouncing that playoff teams need this or that. Sometimes it is a component of the roster. They need an ace. They need a shutdown bullpen. They need an offense that can put the ball in play. It's either that or it's character, you know, it's veteranness, it's experience. And really, playoff teams don't need any one particular thing. I think they need to qualify for the playoffs. That's what they need. And if they can do that, then they just have to be good for, you know, 15 to 20 games and they will win the World Series. So it hurts your odds, certainly, if you lose some of your best players. But there is just so much variance that goes into these short series that you really can't pronounce a team dead in October unless literally it's the AAA roster replacing every one of the starters, because crazy things can happen.
Yeah, one thing I've realized in recent years is being the first person to write a player or a team off, like, you don't get extra points for that. Uh-huh. And, you know, that's the sort of thing, you know, not that we as people who cover baseball should shy away from controversy where it's appropriate.
But, right.
You know, this is just sort of asking for it, right? And that in that way.
Yeah, and it is kind of an interesting issue because you and I mean, we go into clubhouses, we kind of parachute in when we're working on a story or
Don't know who I am,
right? Like this, yeah. They don't know who I am either. There's you know, maybe some of the other beat writers know who I am, but the players don't. I am just a guy with a credential and a lanyard, and that's good enough. And right, I mean, we can write something critical, not that, you know, either of us is writing takedown pieces all that regularly, but we could in theory, and there wouldn't really be any consequences. You know, we target a player we want to write about, and then when he comes to town, we go talk to him, we talk to his teammates, whatever it is. But it's harder if you are covering the team on a daily basis. And so now I don't know what consequences Hoynes will face. He's been on that beat forever, so maybe he could get past this. He's probably had similar issues in the past, but it's a tough thing to navigate because you want your reporter to cover the team honestly and to express the opinions that he or she holds. You don't want them to hold back because they know they're going to have to go into the clubhouse the next day and face the people they're writing about. On the other hand, you can kind of understand why they might take that into account. You have to consider how that is going to affect your ability to get quotes for the rest of the season. So it's not an opinion that you or I would express just because we don't subscribe to the idea that you can rule out a team based on a couple of injuries. But it's kind of an ongoing issue whether you want that access and whether you have to give something up in order to get it.
Yeah, that's one reason why I've never, you know, this is the first time that I've really had access to, like, you know, I can say I want to go talk to this player and pretty, you know, and most of the time I get to actually go do it. But, you know, I haven't minded not having that just because, like, it's, you know, there I've had sports writing jobs where I've had that access and, you know, gotten to like people that I had to criticize because they just weren't performing. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's never a good feeling, but
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, some of our favorite baseball writers are never in clubhouses. It depends what you do with that access. You could get a quote that doesn't really enhance your story at all. And you could write a better story from your living room, drawing on video or stats or your own expertise. So there's no one perfect way to cover baseball.
I will say also that, you know, in my experience, the overwhelming majority of baseball players and coaches and managers and front office people or whoever are grown-ups. And, like, you know, if they aren't just finding out that they're not hitting well or playing well because they're right. reading you writing about them. So, you right. know, usually this isn't a problem, particularly if you're fair and direct about it. And I imagine Hoynes is a veteran beat writer. He'll probably just have it out with Bauer and Kipnis and mm-hmm. everybody will move on.
Right. All right, time for some TV talk, and we know that most of you, all of you perhaps, have not seen Pitch yet. That's okay, we're not really going to spoil it. We've only seen the first episode, so there isn't all that much for us to spoil yet.
She actually makes it to the big leagues.
Yeah. Spoilers, yeah, right. She pitches in a major league game. So you'll see it all Thursday, but we will set the scene now. This will be more of a making of and a question of how well they at least did the pilot based on people who have an experience that is very close to the fictional pitcher Ginny in Pitch. So first, we are welcoming on the showrunner and executive producer of Pitch, Kevin Falls. Hello, Kevin. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
All right. So last month, one of the other EPs on the show dropped a West Wing comp. And I know that this is something that has come up in the discussion of the show. It's one of those shows that's set in sort of a heightened setting in a workplace that everyone's interested in. And so the question is, how much of it is baseball and how much of it is not baseball or something that would fit on any show? And of course, you have worked on the West Wing. You've worked on Sports Night. So you have some experience with balancing these things. So how exactly do you decide how much baseball to put in your baseball show?
Well, you know, it's funny when that it's come out of my mouth a couple of times about West Wing. First, it was just about Walk and Talks, and then it was about the show itself and the balancing act and the fact that the West Wing was always about something. Mm-hmm. I think that's what the show aspires to be. Having worked with Aaron and worked on that show, there's only one West Wing, there's only one Sports Night. We'd be so lucky. I kind of compare it this way. I think of Aaron Sorkin as Bill Walsh. I am Andy Reid. And I think that's probably the best way is I just maybe kind of want to have maybe half this, a quarter of the success that Aaron did, and I'm inspired and learned a lot from him. So that's where I think we aspire to be the West Wing. There was only one West Wing, so that's my big qualifier. As far as like balancing the baseball of it all, a lot of it is dictated by simply the cost of shooting baseball in these venues like Petco Park. We want to take on the road to places like AT&T and Wrigley. That will dictate a lot of the baseball that goes in the show. That said, it can't live just as a baseball show because what are you going to do each week? It's not going to be the game of the week. And I can get into like some of the baseball stories we're going to tackle. But it also like the West Wing and Sports Night will go home with the characters and explore their personal lives. And that's the lifeblood of the show. And we also have the flashback component, which also gets allows the viewer to see how these characters came to be and excel in their fields, whether it's a front office executive or, in Ginny Baker's case, the first female pitcher. So each week we decide, looking at our budget for how much baseball we can put on, we balance into whatever the stories we want to tell each week.
I don't know. I'd object to the Andy Reid comp because having seen the pilot, you didn't cut off the last 2 minutes just out of sheer carelessness. So. As far as, you know, getting the baseball right, that's something that's been covered to death in the coverage surrounding the show in the weeks leading up to the premiere. You know, who have you brought on board? I noticed that, like, one thing that I was really impressed with is that, you know, the clubhouse seems to look right and the, you know, all the sets look good and the baseball is fairly realistic, you know, certainly more so than a lot of other baseball movies that I've seen. So, you know, how did you go about making sure that everything sort of looked realistic?
Well, first of all, coming from you guys, that's high praise indeed. And really, when we're all kind of baseball fans anyway. Dan Fogelman and Rick Singer and I have our own major league teams. So we watch the game. We grew up with the game. We know that most people who watch games besides going to a game, they watch it on television most of the time. So we have to we want to make sure that we had the Fox Sports cameras and the Fox Sports cameramen and directors that help us tell the story through the way you'd see a game on your television. Then we're allowed to tell our narrative and go in close with our cameras and tell the story. But we hired Mike Fisher, who was the wrangler and choreographer of all the Moneyball scenes. We work with consultants like Royce Clayton and Greg Olson to help us, you know, just get the baseball right with our actors. We will with our stars. They were hired, you know, Kylie as early as November without a script, Mark Paul and Mo McRae as late as February, and they're allowed to go to boot camp and really break down and learn how to become baseball players. So that really helps a lot. What's trickier is when we get into the guest stars weekly, and you don't have that lead time. So on more than one occasion, like in 103, we have this very baseball-heavy episode about Ginny's first beanball war. And she wants to throw it a batter, and they don't want her to. And no one wants to throw at her in retaliation. So we hired the baseball players on the Cardinals. We hired baseball players first and see if they could act, because we want to err on the side of getting the baseball right. And through getting those guys, and we were able to make the baseball look as real as possible. It's no secret that we will add velocity to some of the pitching. Kylie can throw a baseball. She can't throw it 85 miles an hour. Nor can any of our male actors. So there'll be some help with VFX in places. But we don't want to be the show that we talk about. You know, when you watch the basketball games on TV or movies and you see them shoot and then you get the close-up of the ball going to the bucket. We don't want to have the throwing of the ball and then the ball popping in the mitt. Whenever possible, we want what we call full frontal of our characters pitching to see the ball come out of their hands. So all of us are paying attention to. Sometimes it's the Fox Sports guys when we're shooting. You say, you know what, Ginny stepped on a line there, walking the field. She would never do that, you know. And little things that they'll catch. They caught a couple of days ago. We were shooting in Petco during the day, and a couple of the outfielders didn't have sunglasses on. That wouldn't be the case. So there's a lot of eyes that catch things that even our experts don't catch. So we're always paying attention to it. And I know, I guarantee you, that people will find things that we miss, but that'll only make us learn, so we won't do it wrong the next time.
Well, a beanball war sounds more like a Diamondback storyline. Yeah. I don't know whether she gets traded to a different NL West team in episode 2 or not.
That's season 4.
Yeah. Well, one thing just to follow up on that, there's a very Fox-heavy presence, which helps because, you know, you get a very convincing performance, for instance, by Colin Cowherd as himself. Among other things, would this show work as well on another network that isn't an MLB rights holder? You know, would you get that same level of realism? Maybe even that same level of cooperation from the league?
I think it's the level of cooperation. Fox certainly incentivized to show their personalities on the network, but it helps. It really helps for the verisimilitude of it, and it also allows us for exposition to have this Greek chorus that kind of fills in what's going on the world without having to like have clunky dialogue between our characters. It really helps advance the stories. I'd like to, if Fox allows us, to branch out and get an ESPN pop here and there, because, or Turner, because that's the world. The universe is bigger. Certainly Major League Baseball wouldn't mind that. But at this point, so far it's just Fox, but down the road, hopefully we'll get some others involved too. But it really does help to see these personalities. It just keeps you in it, keeps you in the moment, keeps you in the reality of it without popping to an actor on some fake sports night network.
And should those sort of indicators of authenticity, should we expect those to be dialed back a bit as the series proceeds? I mean, in the first episode, which I believe was filmed during the All-Star game, you know, it's in a packed stadium. And of course, you have all the Fox personalities, you have MLB Network popping up, you have all these signs that, hey, this is real baseball and we're doing a real baseball show and we are paying attention to this stuff. But I'd imagine that at some point you're trying to run a show from week to week and you can't always arrange to have a full stadium of cheering people ready for your big scene in that episode. So are you going to dial that back sort of half by necessity and half just because, okay, you've established that this is real baseball now, we know what we're doing, so we can kind of focus on the story stuff?
Yeah, well, I think, do you mean actually the scenes that we shoot in stadiums? Because the feeling is that when Ginny pitches, certainly this first year, this first season, she's going to probably sell out every stadium she pitches in.
Right.
But the story itself will probably start to die down. Although I think if you remember Lynn's Sanity, that for a while it was 3 straight Sports Illustrated covers or something like that. That's a kind of what we're thinking. It would even be bigger. But we got to believe that, like anything else, something else will bump it. And it'll start to die down. I think maybe towards the course of the end of the year that maybe less people go. But yes, for that reason, it will. If you're talking about filling stadiums with fans, and just the technical end of it, which is expensive to do.
Yeah.
When you have to, with VFX, drop in plates where you see people in the stands, that's not easy. We do it very effectively in the pilot. We do very effectively in the subsequent episodes. But I think the reality, which is what we always, the reality in the calendar of our show, we do follow the baseball calendar. That coupled with just the budget constrictions that you have for something like this, yes, you will see less of that, talking heads. But I imagine at least the beginning, you want that energy of a big crowd.
One thing that I was really pleasantly surprised with was there, you've got some veteran actors like Dan Laurie and Mark Paul Gosselaar on the show, but Kylie Bunbury, who was previously unknown to me, except through, you know, her brother's a professional soccer player. So that was the only way that I'd even heard of her before, but she's really good. So how did you find her? How did the casting process go? You know, knowing that this show would live or die with the success of its lead actress.
Well, Kylie's hire predates me. When Dan, I came on to run the show in December, work on the pilot with those guys, with Dan Fogelman and Rick Singer, and then be attached to running the series. But I do know that they found Kylie before there was a script. They wrote some scenes, they auditioned actresses. They heard about this girl that was coming in who had a professional soccer player father, and hired her and broke, you know, she never threw a baseball. I mean, maybe as a kid she did, but they taught her very early on how to do it. But the fact that they got this woman, and I've seen now 3 episodes, she's going to be a genuine star, whether it's on this show, and I hope it is, and I think it's going to be. There's something special about it. If she never picked up a ball, she would have been a star. I think, and she's a wonderful actress. She's so compelling on screen. You can't take your eyes off her. I swear to God, I'm not bullshitting you guys. It's that's how great she is, how luminescent she is. So I think they'd be the first to say that they may have gotten lucky, that they were hoping to find somebody that you can sell as a major league baseball pitcher. And she did that. She's a hard worker. She is a natural athlete, which really helped. She probably benefited from not having all the bad habits that guys get if they played a little league or played sandlot or just played on their own. She just was a blank slate when it came to that, except for, and baked in her DNA was these professional athletes' genes, which she was able to tap into. And I think I could speak for Dan and Rick that Kylie exceeded their expectations.
And why the screwball? That's what her character Ginny throws. And we've seen some women make it to professional baseball using a knuckleball. That's kind of the thought that if this happens one day, that the knuckleball might be the best route. But Ginny throws a screwball, which is an interesting wrinkle.
Yeah, I think the idea is that you could think of all these guys who have kind of held on throwing a knuckleball. And it spoke less to the athleticism and more to just kind of like cracking that, holding the ball a certain way and throwing the knuckleball, whereas this made her more of an athlete. The screwball is a very difficult pitch, very hard on the arm. But I think that was the feeling that she actually had. She was a pitcher that excelled as a pitcher, as a girl growing up in Little League and then beyond. But she needed to learn this particular specialty pitch that wasn't knuckleball, that spoke a little bit more to her athleticism. I think that was the reason why they picked the screwball.
So this is something that our colleague Andy Greenwald says, and I think he got it from somebody who works in TV, but that the first 10 or so shows of our episodes of any new show are really very much about, you know, figuring out what works, figuring out what actor chemistry works, and, you know, things that you want to do going forward. So what have you, you know, we've seen the pilot, you know, what have you learned from the pilot that, you know, you think that will really help the show going forward?
Well, I think the fact that we were able to nail the baseball, we've kind of figured out that we're still figuring out the baseball, but we had to produce it in a way that, you know, we can do on a series where we just don't have to do it once and blow our wad and can't do it again. But Kylie's advancement as an actress, but it really, one of the big, I don't want to call it a surprise because I worked with Mark Paul Gosselaar, the co-creator of Franklin Bash, so I knew him before. I knew he was talented, but there's a reinvention of him and a chemistry that Kylie and MP have that's a very difficult thing to bottle, and we're getting that early, and you're going to see it. And we're so bullish on the show that we're right now, as of an hour ago, we're trying to get the first 3 episodes out to critics, even though we air on Thursday. That's how much we believe in the show and how good the first few episodes go. And that speaks to their chemistry. It speaks to the stories that I think people go, well, it's a good baseball movie, that pilot. What goes on beyond it, you'll see in the first 2 episodes. But we also have a deep bench, if we can talk and use a baseball metaphor, is that you talk about the rest of our cast. There's not a weak spot in the lineup. You know, they're all wonderful. Mom McCray and Allie Larder and Mark Consuelos and I could go on and on. They're really Dan Loria, who just looks like he was born to be the baseball manager. They're all great. And Tim Zhao, that you can leave a Kylie scene where you're going, my God, she's amazing. You can leave a Mark Paul Gosselaar scene, and then Mark Consuelos comes up as the general manager and dazzles. It's one of those shows where not since West Wing have I seen quite a cast with this depth, and I've worked on some good shows with great, wonderful, wonderful casts. But I think this one is very special.
And I'm, you know, I've been trying to observe the reaction, and of course, no one except a few critics have seen the show yet, so they're all just reacting to the concept of the show. And so, of course, there are some people who will look at this and say, oh, you know, a woman in the major leagues, come on, that's not going to happen, very much like some of the fictional Padres in the fictional Pitch Clubhouse. And then there is also kind of this other message that I've seen, almost an unintentional kind of exclusion, where, you know, there was a Times article about the show last week, which was pretty positive. Yeah. And the tweet about that article, which didn't come from you, it came from the Times, but, you know, it asked this question: how will Pitch cater to the hardcore baseball fan expecting authenticity while still appealing to women? And, you know, it set up this kind of, you know, it's as if it's either or. And many female baseball fans were not thrilled about how that tweet was constructed. So, you know, not that you are in charge of marketing this show, but how are you trying to walk that line where, you know, you are including everyone, but not unintentionally insulting someone's relationship to the game?
Yeah, I would think that, yeah, you just say I had baseball fans and non-baseball fans alike. I think it would have been probably the simpler way to do it. But I think it's a fair question we've got, that everyone's talked about baseball being a barrier to entry, as they say in the marketing meetings. We were mindful of that because we know that too. We have a partnership with Major League Baseball. It's stupid to leave baseball at the altar, just use their name and then jump off and do a soap opera. I think there was some nervousness, understandably, with the studio network going, well, what is the show beyond that? I think baseball, professional sports in general, have stakes. Careers are very short-lived. Some people burn out quickly. Some people don't have a plan after they retire. It's very hard on marriages. All that stuff, all that drama and conflict is in any kind of sports show. And I think that that's something that we want to explore. But we don't want to just use baseball as a Trojan horse and then and never get back on inside the horse again, because we feel like I know we're all excited about doing the trade deadline episode. We have a cool waiver wire episode. You'd think, oh my God, is anybody get their head around it? But people's lives are at stake. Not a mean life or death, but where they're going to go, what they're going to do. There's stakes to that. Not to mention what you do when you have a windfall financially and how you spend that money, how you deal with your wife. There's all those things are there. But I believe also, I mentioned earlier about the flashbacks as being something that we found in the pilot to be effective and compelling in telling a story that informs the present, but is in its own way extremely interesting to see how these people get to where they are. There's so few people that men and women that excel at this level. What did it take to get there? And we will sometimes explore that. So I think that was why there was this eagerness to show the first three episodes to critics. That's, by the way, if we get them done in the next 24 hours, as far as some of the editing and music, to say that we're not having a problem. I sit in that writer's room every day with a great group of writers where we're of a backlog of stories that we want to tell that will appeal to the baseball fan and the non-baseball fan. You don't have to know baseball to appreciate this show. If you do know baseball, you're going to love it that much more, because there's never been, think about this, guys, there's never been a show like this, right? There's never been a show that used a professional sports franchise, lifted the hood, and then went into the fictional inside of it with all the characters and everything that goes on there. And if we don't do it right, there never will be one again. But that's what's exciting. When you watch it, you're going to be straddling this reality, because there's some things that are happening in the real major leagues in real time that we'll address. We'll play. We're going to go to the All-Star game, and we're going to go to the All-Star game that happened. And yet our players and our people are going to be in that orbit. It was in San Diego. Right? Our team, our characters play for the Padres. We're going to embed them in there in a way that I feel seamless. So it's exciting to see this because no one's ever seen it done before. And I think that if we fall flat on our faces, it won't be for lack of trying, but I really think it's going to be the opposite.
And this is something that you sort of touched on in your last answer, but one thing that's interesting, like this was such a, the pilot was just so emotionally heightened. And in terms of like a big historical moment that this show in its own universe would touch on, you know, you're not going to get bigger than what you showed, you know, really in the first 15 minutes of the first show. So I'm thinking about, you know, not only the West Wing, but one of the only other successful sports shows in recent memory, Friday Night Lights, that started out on, they had big first season emotional stakes, and Friday Night Lights just sort of stayed at an 11 for five seasons, and the West Wing managed to top that season one emotional crescendo again in season two. So, you know, if this goes five seasons or seven seasons, how do you leave something on the table, really? Or, you know, make this work in a world where eventually if Ginny's there for five seasons, then a woman in baseball is going to become routine?
It's a very good question.
Or should I ask you that question again in 3 years?
Yeah, I think if you're asking for a question, if you ask me in 4 years, I'll say, hey, there, that's how. But right now, it's probably a little more relevant. I agree. That'll be a challenge. But I listen, when we first did the pilot, we were like, actually, Dan and I and Rick in May going, okay, now we got a series to pick up. And we suddenly just unfolded before us. The writers added a whole other component where basically we're only doing 10 this year, unfortunately, 9 plus the pilot. And we could keep going. We have so many places to go with the show. I agree. What do you do when suddenly Ginny becomes, you know, a number five starter that's stuck on the team? Well, does she get sent down to the minors? Does she come back up? Does she get traded? Do other players get traded? There are some other things I don't even want to talk about that we want to do because they'd be spoilers about that, things that would be shaken up. But yeah, that is certainly a challenge. I think doing 22 or 24 episodes of a show like this would be more of a challenge. I think to really get the scope of playing in these stadiums, I think that's prohibitive, to be honest. This is just me talking now. I might have the studio network saying, what the hell are you saying? But I actually believe that would have to be the way to do it effectively. But I would love to be able to do, you know, 18 episodes, and because I know we could deliver at a high level. And I wish we were doing 18 this year. But I don't have a problem seeing this going 5 to 7 seasons.
All right, last question. This is not actually your first baseball project. You wrote the story and the screenplay for Summer Catch, the 2001 yes. Freddie Prinze Jr. vehicle. You knew that was going to come up. So I know that from what I've read, Freddie worked fairly hard to try to look like an authentic pitcher, but there was definitely some judicious editing going on in that movie, and you never really got that great a look at his mechanics. I felt like I got a better look at Kylie's in the pilot of this episode. So I have to ask, you have to win a game tomorrow, and you have to give the ball to one of these real-life actors, Freddie Prinze Jr. or Kylie Bunbury. Whom are you choosing?
So this is a tough one, because my dear friend Mike Tolan and Bill Simmons, is a Clippers tickets partner, directed that. I have a wonderful story about the origins of Summer Catch that I can share with you if you'd like. The other thing is, Bill Simmons has gone on record saying it's the worst ending ever to a baseball movie.
Yeah, we should have had him on to grill you about Summer Catch.
Yeah, I have an answer for him that would be for another time. I would go with Kylie I would go with Kylie for 7 innings. And I'd have to think about who my closer would be. But yes, I and that's nothing against Freddie, but I'm giving the ball to Kylie.
All right.
Hey, you want me to tell you the original Summer Catch story?
Sure.
So originally I wrote it in 95, and the director attached was Sam Weissman. Mm-hmm. And he's directed a few movies. And he lived in Cape Cod and hired me. I wrote the script, went back there, was done with it, and they actually greenlit it at Fox. So they were casting it. They hired an actor, and then they were looking for the girl. So they had a chemistry read. They found the girl, and then one of the Fox executives, who will remain nameless, was sitting there with Laura Ziskin, this legendary producer, passed away a few years ago, was there, and they watched the chemistry read between the actor and the actress. Lights come up, and Laura Ziskin turns to the executive and says, well, what did you think of her? And he says, her? He's terrible. That guy will never be a star. It was Matt Damon. It was going to be Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. And it fell apart. And then a couple of years ago, Mike Tolan was my neighbor. Our kids grew up together. Saw the script on the shelf. So what's this? Started reading it, and then he loved. Like, I love this, and then he attached himself direct, and went up with those guys, and I couldn't be happier because it would have been better than Mike. I thought Mike did a fine job, but to think about with that original casting, what Mike could have done with something like them,
we haven't seen the Affleck Damon baseball movie. That's a big miss from their canon.
Yeah, I know it's true, huh?
You got the band back together from Wing Commander. That was post Wing Commander, right?
I don't even know.
I think Wing Commander was 99.
Yeah, sure. No, that was pre, because this was 95 when we were talking about it.
Freddie Prinze Jr. and Matthew Lillard.
Mm. Oh, I didn't know they were in that together. See, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I'll have to go rent it.
Good. Ben, you weren't recording that part where I revealed I knew way too much about Wing Commander.
I'll use that against you guys if something ever comes up where I need this.
Okay. Well, we are looking forward to seeing more. I'm especially excited for the waiver wire episode. Then I'll finally understand how waivers work, maybe after watching that
episode. By the way, can I tell you that is trying to get that waiver story figured out. Even our experts have trouble explaining it to us. It's crazy.
You'll notice we don't talk about it that much.
Right.
Yeah, it's tricky, but yes, there will be a waiver wire episode. So stay tuned for that.
Revocable or irrevocable? That is the question, but we will wait to find out.
if Kylie's reading her own press and, you know, you want to have the Ringer MLB show on in the background at any point.
Yeah, sure. We'll do a drop for you. We'll be in the background talking about baseball and Wing Commander.
You know, by the way, I would love that. I like all that. As soon as we'll talk to Fox and see what we can do.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on, and we wish you the best with the show. Kevin Falls, thanks again.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
All right, before we talk to Kelsey Whitmore and Stacey Piagno about their real-life baseball careers, I want to tell you about today's sponsors, starting with Betterment. It's never too late to save for retirement and other financial goals. Even if you're already retired, you could still be saving money. And Betterment has changed the industry by making investing easier at a lower cost. I've been hearing about Betterment in the Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg and TechCrunch. I'm a man of letters. I read. And Betterment has been getting coverage because it's the largest independent automated investing service, managing more than $5 billion for over 175,000 customers. The financial services industry has embraced technology and innovation through the creation of automated investing, meaning that you keep more of your money with fees that are a fraction of what you pay with traditional financial services. Excess cash is automatically invested, so every dollar you invest is put to work. Your portfolio is automatically rebalanced. This is like Moneyball for money. And Betterment is a member of SIPC, which means that your investments are protected. Bank-level security means your personal data is protected, too. So right now, get up to 6 months of no fees. Learn how when you go to betterment.com/MLB. That's betterment.com/MLB. Betterment, investing made better. And I also want to reintroduce you to New Synergy Gasoline, ExxonMobil's most tested fuel ever. It's been through and passed some of the most stringent tests ever developed. Developed in the same ExxonMobil research lab as F1 Fuels, New Synergy Gasoline is engineered by chemists who understand the science behind keeping engines clean and know the complexities of modern car technology. That's why it's formulated to keep modern fuel injectors clean while still working great on older engines. New Synergy is also engineered with 7 key ingredients, each with its own unique function to help make Synergy Exxon and Mobil's best fuel ever. And those 7 key ingredients include dual detergents to help clean your engine and corrosion inhibitor, which is designed to help prevent rust from threatening your engine and its performance. So refuel with New Synergy gasoline today. Only available at the almost 11,000 Exxon and Mobil stations across the U.S. Energy lives here. Visit Exxon.com or Mobil.com. I know you know how to spell those things, but just in case, EXXON.com or MOBIL.com for more information. All right, let's get back to baseball. All right, so we are now joined by Stacey Piagno and Kelsey Whitmore, who were teammates with the women's national team at the Women's World Cup, which they got back from recently. But Also, we're teammates over the summer with the Sonoma Stompers, an independent professional team in the Pacific Association. So they've been playing together for a while now, and they have come as close as anyone in the world to the Ginny, the real life Ginny experience from pitch. So we wanted to have them both on to give us their impressions of the show and talk a little bit about baseball and their experience too. So Stacy, hello.
Hi.
And Kelsey, hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. So you've both seen the pilot, which is as much as we've seen. So whoever wants to go first, can you give us some general impressions of the show? Did you think that they captured the experience, or, you know, was it true to your experience for the most part?
I thought the show, like, I was able to really relate to it, everything about it, with, like, how she was that girl that, you know, wasn't a girly girl growing up, and her dad was always someone that pushed her and was kind of like her mentor growing up. I know Stacy was able to relate to it too, but when she was thrown kind of in the back, like in the closet, in the room where no one was, like, that's exactly how we felt. And so it was cool to watch the show, and I was able, every part of it, I was able to relate to it, and I really am excited for the rest of the show, so I'm definitely going to keep up on that.
Yeah, definitely. It was totally relatable. I know that actually they screened it for our women's team, so we all got to kind of watch it a second time. Me and Kelsey got to watch it in Sonoma, and then again with our team. And just, you know, pretty much down to everything from before she met the team to kind of when she was first, you know, around the team and on the field and all of that, I think it's definitely something that we can relate to. And, you know, going in and out of the nerves and being around the teammates and things like that, kind of her sense of humor, I feel, is pretty similar to myself and probably a little bit with Kelsey, too. So I felt like it was very relatable, and I'm really excited to watch more of it.
You know, you guys have come as close as anyone has to actually living this. Was there anything that, you know, I know it's only been one episode, but was there any aspect of, like, the awkwardness or struggle fitting in that you feel like was overplayed or underplayed that didn't really match up with your experience?
Especially in Sonoma, like, we had a great group of guys. Like, everybody, at least in my experience, was very accepting. And I know Kelsey got there a week or two before me, so I'll let her kind of fill in that gap. But, yeah, like, everyone's pretty accepting in that sense. But definitely, kind of as a whole, like, when she stepped on the field, I know, like, when I took my first start and things like that, I definitely felt kind of in that zone where she was, where she's a little bit nervous and things like that. But I think it was very pretty accurate. And I'm actually curious, Kelsey, go ahead, because she kind of took, like I said, she got there a couple weeks before me. So the guys hadn't ever really been around a girl playing ball before. They were a little bit more introduced to it when I got there. But she can kind of fill you in on that first couple steps.
Yeah, with Ginny, it was a little different because for her, the guys that she kind of came to, some of them didn't, like, they would look at her and didn't accept her. And, you know, I felt exactly the way she felt because there were a couple guys when I first got there, like, they looked at me and they just gave me that look where I was like, man, I don't think they're gonna like me. And then there was this one guy that it was an outfielder that she knew in the past, they were good friends. And I was able to relate with that with one of the other guys that really took me in when I first got there. And he introduced me to the team, and, like, he was always by my side and always had my back. And so that was one thing I was really able to relate to. Like, there were characters in the show that I was able to picture myself with, like, the guys in Sonoma, how they resembled that too. So, like, it was almost the same the way I came in. The only difference was our coach. He was more accepting towards us, unlike Jenny's. Like, hers was a little bit kind of felt forced to do it. but yeah. But that was the only difference. But other than that, like, the guys, when she came in, obviously there were a couple that didn't really accept it. But then there's always those few who then kind of she got along with and they had her back. And I was able to relate to that too. So I guess we'll have to wait and see in the future of the show, see how they end up getting along as a team. Because everyone knows how we all got along. And I know Stacy and I, we both got along with the guys. Like, there was not one guy on the team that just, we could not stand, that just hated us. Like, there was none that I can think of.
So there's a flashback scene in the pilot where Ginny goes to the field with her dad, and, you know, it's a bunch of boys there and their dads, and they're all kind of looking at them, wondering what they're doing here, and, you know, almost humoring her when the dad wants her to have some time for a tryout. Did you have experiences like that? I assume, you know, at some point, a lot of girls who are playing baseball kind of get funneled into softball one way or another, and you didn't. So was there a moment like that in your past for either of you? I guess we can start with Stacey.
Yeah, I mean, growing up, for the most part, on the teams that I played, you know, they were the same guys that I had played with since I was like 5 years old. So they were pretty accepting and they were kind of used to seeing me. But there were a couple instances where when I played on travel teams, or even a lot of times when I would play other teams, especially through high school, you know, my first year as a freshman when we played against the other teams and they had no idea that there was a girl that they were going to be playing against, I definitely got that feeling. You know, everybody would start looking and you could kind of hear them, you know, chuckling in the dugout, and, you know, you'd say, oh, you know, is that a girl? There's a girl. And you know, I'd walk out to the mound, you know, primarily as a pitcher, and I'd start throwing, and then they would say, oh, dang, you know, it is a girl, and this and that. And, you know, usually once I started throwing and once I threw my warm-up pitches, they seemed to be pretty impressed and pretty accepting after that point. Though really not so much on my team, but a lot of times on other teams, or if it was ever the first time that somebody had seen me, I've definitely gotten that feeling before. But I've been pretty lucky as far as my own teammates, and then after I've thrown and things like that, I've felt definitely more accepted after that.
Well, in the show, when she throws her first pitch at the tryout, there's an audible gasp and there's a look of wonder on everyone's face. Yeah. And I'm sure that is exactly how it was with you too.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. again, like, it's funny, like, you know, as I'm like taking this long walk out to the mound, that's kind of when you start hearing like, oh, it's a girl and this and that, and oh, I'm a hit and this. And then once I throw the first pitch there, you know, the gasp kind of comes, and it's always fun to kind of play against people like that. And it's fun to play against people who doubt you or who view you visually, you know, and then you get to kind of prove yourself against that. So that's always, you know, it's part of the game. It's part of what me and Kelsey have kind of been through and lived through. So it's good.
There's an interesting, I mean, one of the few conflicts that actually shows up with when Ginny's around, it revolves around ass slapping. And, you know, maybe this is not something that you guys had to deal with specifically with the Stompers, but how much of the, if there is awkwardness, even if you do get along with your teammates, like how much could you tell that they might have been mediating or changing their behavior because they were in mixed company?
I feel like before we were there, I mean, obviously they're the same baseball players and everything, but their mentality of like girls in baseball, like, I think it totally changed, and they respect it and they accept it and they look at it differently, and they understand what we go through and what we've accomplished, and at the end of the day though, they still treat us like the guys on the team, but at the same time, I feel like they just respect the idea of us a lot more. And I know I overheard a couple of them talking that there were times they almost did that. They'd almost like slap us in the butt on accident, but they would hold themselves back because it's a habit. You know, like, I know I've overheard them saying it. I think it's Joelle. Yeah, but like I overheard them saying it. And, like, I just started laughing, but no, like it was different, but they never really did anything like that. But I definitely think it changed their mentality and how to respect even girls in general, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I totally felt like they were some of the most respectful guys ever. But at the same time, while they were respectful of us, they were definitely still themselves as far as, you know, things that they said or the way that they joked. They didn't hold back, which is good. Like, that's what we want. We're going to be treated just like any of the guys. And it was a blast. Like, it was a great time. Like, me and Kelsey, we've become best friends with some of these guys. And, you know, we still keep in touch. And it was great because they were definitely still themselves. But they were aware that, yes, you know, they have two ladies in the clubhouse now. So it was a good mixture of everything, really.
And I wonder, you know, you're both two-way players. You pitch and hit. But, Stacey, mm-hmm. you are primarily a pitcher and you were with the Stompers. So. Mm-hmm. How did you get guys out, or how did you go about getting guys out that was maybe different from what you had done before or have done in other settings? As far as I know, you don't throw a super screwball or anything, but what was your strategy?
Yeah, you know, for me, the difference between playing with guys and girls, you know, when I'm playing with the girls, I would definitely think of myself as more of a power pitcher. I can get away with throwing a lot more fastballs. And then when I play with the guys, I just have to be more strategic as far as using my off speed and really keeping them off balance. I do throw a knuckle curve. That's kind of one of my go-tos. Mm-hmm. I also, you know, I have a two seam that I've recently developed and that worked really well for me. So between those two and then, you know, your traditional curve and all that stuff, the biggest thing was just keeping batters off balance and just mixing in my pitches a lot more. I kind of became like an off-speed pitcher versus more of a power pitcher with the women. So it's all just kind of strategic and being smart and definitely keeping the ball low in the zone no matter what I do. And I saw myself pretty successful with that.
Yeah, there's a conversation going around regarding fiction in general about the importance of representation, about seeing, you know, both men and women and people of all races and gender identities and sexual orientations in certain roles in literature or television or movies. So as women who are, you know, obviously extremely interested in baseball, how important is seeing a show about a woman ball player to you guys? And how much did you get, you know, young girls coming up to you and saying, you know, because I saw you do this, I feel like I can do it myself, or I might have interest in doing it myself.
Honestly, I think being able to see a show with a woman like doing a dream that I dream of, I think it's amazing. Like, I think it's great. I think it's about time like something like that happens. It's the next step of people knowing about it and getting the idea of it and the possibility of it in their minds and in the back of their head. And I know, like, even though it's still far from happening, it still gives everyone a hope and a chance. And it gives me and probably Stacey and every other girl that plays baseball a good feeling where it's like, oh, like, where something we all can relate to and all know how each other feels and, like, watch something other than ourselves doing it, but watch something that we really relate to and understand. And after games, it's great to see, like, all those little girls come running up to us. And I thought it was super cool to see little boys too at the same time because they're so innocent at that age. And when you see a little boy come up to you and ask for your autograph, it's kind of like, that's super cool. He doesn't know what it's like for a girl to be playing baseball. He's not judging us at the moment. He's just looking at us as a ball player. And like, I think that was super exciting to see as well, even with all the hundreds of little girls that we've come across this summer.
Yeah, definitely agree with Kels. You know, as far as the show, it's totally relatable. I think that the more publicity, just girls in general, like, you know, me and Kels and with the women's national team, like the more publicity that we get and the more that people in the world and, you know, we're talking about America specifically, like the more that people see that, I think that it will be more accepted and it will open, you know, more doors and more opportunities for women in general because, you know, we're talking about women now. So I think that that's definitely a big thing. And, you know, agreed again for a second time, as far as the kids, it was great. Like we got so much support from younger girls, from older women, from grandmas, from moms, from everyone, and also just from, you know, younger boys and things like that. And it was really cool to see, like, you know, going into it, and Kelsey will back me up on this, like, we had no idea that any of this would even be, like, as big as a thing as it was. You know, we just heard about this opportunity to go play out in Sonoma, and we were like, you know, an opportunity to play baseball, of course, why wouldn't we take it? So we just went out and we were going to go play and, you know, we heard, oh, you know, you guys have an interview on this day. And we're like, okay. And then one interview turned into like 5 and then 10 and then there's cameras. And then like, it just like really took storm and it became like a big thing. So it was definitely cool. But I think with the show, again, airing, I think just the more people see it, it'll start to, over time, of course, become maybe more of a something that would be accepting. And I think it's going to be great for women's baseball in general. And just really, you know, let girls know that, you know, maybe you don't have to be funneled into softball. You know, there is a way that you can play baseball. And at the moment, you know, the highest level of women's baseball that we have is the women's national team. But, you know, hopefully one day that can grow and, you know, maybe we can have our own league or, you know, I'm sure at some point in time, maybe we'll be mixed in with the guys or maybe it'll be a combination. But I just think for us, like with me and Kels, we just want to play baseball, you know, like this is something that we've grown up doing. And whether you're a guy or girl or whether you're playing with guys or playing with girls, it's just the sport that we love. So I think the more society sees that, it'll become more of a normal thing, which will be great for us.
Yeah. And were there ever moments, you know, in the pilot, there's this moment where, of course, the pressure gets to her. And I've been to Arnold Field many times where you pitch for the Stompers and it's not quite like Petco Park, but still there were, you know, bigger crowds than the Stompers are accustomed to, certainly. And you mentioned all the interviews and the national attention. So were there moments where you got in your head a little and said, wow, you know, I'm representing 50% of the people in the world right right now, and you know, it's all on my shoulders. And were there times when you kind of had to say to yourself, you know, I'm also doing this for myself, and I'm just a ball player, and I just want to play baseball here, and I can't worry about all the little girls in the stands who are going to be crushed if I don't do well right now?
Yes, every single thing you said, I can totally agree with. That's exactly like, I felt a lot, like most of the time. I guess I did feel pressured, like, because I felt like I had a lot of people just like looking up to me, and like I had to make everyone proud in a way. And I felt like Stacey and I were like the head of women in baseball, and all those little girls were just looking up to us like, oh, they're going to do so good. And it's like, it gave like this, like, it was a great feeling to be looked up, but at the same time, it was tough, because it's like, you want to do so good, and you want to make people happy. But then I realized after learning it, like, the hard way, I realized, like, I got to make myself happy at the end of the day after the game with my performance before anyone else. Because if I do, then it will just make me a better athlete and, like, less mental stress on myself. But I was able to, yeah, everything you said, that I did felt that way at times.
I definitely had moments of that. But as a whole, I think I was pretty fortunate in a sense of I was kind of able to put that aside more so than I thought, because it was weird. I remember the first game I pitched in. I flew in the night before. I think I got in at like 4 a.m. and I go over, you know, I get to the field at like afternoon time and I had to go pitch. And I thought I was going to be really nervous. I was really nervous on the plane ride over, I can remember. But honestly, like, once I stepped on the field, it was weird. I was luckily able to put it all aside, and I felt pretty comfortable. And I think for me, something that I've learned to do over the years, which, I mean, what, I'm 25, and I've got, I don't know how many years on Kels. So, you know, it's something that I've been able to kind of learn over the past years or so. But, you know, you have to treat it like it's every other game. It's every other practice. You've been there before. Like, I almost mentally put myself in a spot where, like, oh, it's no big deal. I'm just throwing with my friends out here, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
And it really worked for me in those moments. I can remember there were a couple games later on. It was kind of randomly, like in spurts, where for whatever reason, I got a little nervous and things like that. But as a whole, and especially my first couple games, I really did feel comfortable out there. And it was great. It was a great feeling. I didn't feel too overwhelmed and things like that. So it kind of worked out for me. I wasn't too overwhelmed, luckily, with that.
And is it something that you still run into from time to time? You know, we talked to one of the showrunners earlier in this episode, and we talked about how people have set up this false dichotomy between, you know, you have to either market the show to hardcore baseball fans or you have to market it to women, as if there's no, you know, overlap between the two. And do you two run into that in your daily lives if you meet someone new and you say, I play baseball, or if it just comes up in conversation that you're a, you know, someone who's interested in baseball? Do you get that kind of condescending attitude, like, oh, you know, that's cute that you like baseball or something, and you're thinking, no, I am better at baseball than you, and I've spent more time playing it and I know more about it than you do. Does that happen still sometimes?
I haven't gotten too much of like a cutesy vibe. Definitely, like, whenever, I mean, this happens all the time, whenever the conversation comes up and we say, oh, we play baseball, the first thing everybody always says is, oh, you mean softball?
Yeah.
And it's like, no, it's just baseball. And then they say, oh, you mean hardball? And so we always have to go into explaining all of that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I haven't really gotten too much of the, like, oh, you can really play baseball. But, I mean, I'm sure that there's been times, like, when I've been talking to more of, it, like, an athlete or another baseball player where they're like, oh, okay, you know, they'll probably be like, oh, you're like, you play baseball. So it is kind of like, once you see it, you kind of understand it a lot. But for the most part, people are usually pretty impressed with the idea. And, you know, a 1 minute conversation can turn into like a 30 minute conversation because you have to explain about what you mean by you playing baseball.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's definitely a little bit of separation probably with some of that stuff.
Yeah. I usually, every time someone asks me, I know what sport I play, or if they ask me to just go over like, oh, you really play baseball, they usually, for the most part, a lot of people are interested and really, really excited for me and happy for me. And I usually don't expect that. Like, anytime I ever go up to tell someone, like, yeah, I play baseball, or explain to them, I expect them to not support it and to question me, like, oh, really? Well, how are you at it? Like, are you good? Like, like, do girls even play? Like, I usually expect that. But for the most part, a lot of people are super supportive and very interested and curious and always ask questions. And I think it's cool a lot of the times, and it's pretty interesting.
All right. Well, hopefully Pitch will make those conversations easier for you. It's like when Moneyball came out and, you know, people like me and Michael who look at baseball stats all day, we can just say, oh, you know, Moneyball, yeah, we're like that nerd guy in Moneyball. And now you can just point to Pitch and say, yeah, have you seen Pitch? That's what I do. So that'll make it a little easier. I have that shorthand. All right. So people can find Kelsey and Stacy on Twitter at their full names, Kelsey Whitmore and Stacy Piagno. Thanks a lot for sharing your thoughts. Good to talk to you both.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
No problem. Thank you so much.
All right, so that will do it for today. Thanks to Kevin and Kelsey and Stacy for joining us. Thanks, as always, to Michael for going on this great podcasting adventure with me. Thanks to you for accompanying us. Enjoy the rest of your work week. We will be back with another episode of the Ringer MLB Show on Friday.